You're listening to The Tao of Indifference, sex, dating, and relationship advice for an indifferent world.
Demetrius, and you are listening to the Tao of Indifference podcast, and today I have a very special guest, all the way from the deepest, furthest reaches of Twitter and Brooklyn, I want to say, on the podcast to discuss some things that I'm not knowledgeable about, and I'm hoping that she will drop some major knowledge bomb. Let's go with that.
We'll see.
Known on the internet as Perhaps Perhaps, please, can you introduce yourself to the world?
Hi, I'm Perhaps Perhaps, also on Twitter as @polygalseeks. I'm a married queer mom, and I've been dating non-monogamously for about 4 years now. So with that caveat, I'm not an expert, I'm just someone who's been doing it for a little while. I started tweeting about it because you get so many, like, bad and depressing messages online that I just needed to, like, it needed to be funny instead of sad, and so that's kind of how I got started on this, and that's how I found you on the internet.
Yes, and yeah. I will say that I like that you mentioned that you wanted to put something out that's funny, because I love your, when you screenshot messages or profiles that you get.
Yeah.
Because you primarily use OkCupid, right?
I primarily use OkCupid. I use Tinder a little bit, but usually I don't screen cap that, because it's just bullshit.
Yeah. It's like, hey, penis?
Yeah.
Like, a lot of that.
Like, hey, you want to hang out right now? And I'm like, no, it's 2 a.m. on a Tuesday.
Yeah. Hey, you up?
Yeah.
I just read a Reductress article. Do you read Reductress?
Yes, I love Reductress.
They just put something up that was like, I replied to a you up and I had the best sex of my life. And it's like, come on. It was so great.
Yeah. I mean, maybe, but it doesn't look good.
Yeah. I love when you screen cap an OkCupid profile that's like, 2% match, and it's like, come on.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
Yeah, I get a lot of those where I'm like, you're clearly just messaging everyone on Earth.
Yeah.
Or you only answered one question. Or the other thing is I get a lot of messages from Qatar and India, which I have no idea why, but it is definitely a thing.
I feel like that happens a lot, because I've seen a lot of people who screen cap their stuff, and it's always, there's always like one guy in India like, listen, I know it's long distance, but we can make it work.
Yeah.
What? No.
Yeah.
That's
They're
crazy.
Like, if you're interested, I'll buy airplane tickets. And I'm like, no.
This is how, did you hear about the guy who, he was like, oh, I'm dating this woman. She's in China. I'm from Sweden. I'm going to fly out there. And then he flew to Hong Kong, I'm assuming. And he got there and he's like, I'm here. And she like, was like, I'm a catfish. I'm, you know, like, oh, wait a day. He waited like 2 weeks. And lived in a airport and got exhaustion.
Mm.
And it was like a huge thing. And I'm just like, how can you be so dumb? Like,
I don't know. Man. I mean, I think some people get really carried away with the fantasy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, that seems insane to me. I have a hard time putting myself in the headspace where I would do that.
Yeah. That's, I think the most I've ever traveled for a date was like somewhere in New Jersey. But like a city. Like, it was like, oh man, I gotta go to Hoboken. Ooh.
Yeah.
That's as far as I've gone. That and like the, no, I'm lying, Long Island. But that's a Long Island railroad trip. It's like, if she was catfishing me, I'd be like, well, there's another train in an hour.
Yeah, so, it'll be okay. Scenario.
Yes. Speaking of OkCupid, so you like OkCupid?
I do. I think it works for me because my life is complicated, because I'm not just, like, a single person, but I'm, like, I'm married, and I have a kid, and I'm polyamorous, and, like, this is what I'm looking for. Like, it gives you way more room to explain what I'm about, and so I feel like I'm more likely to meet someone I actually would want to have a real connection with through there, and it's just not as likely through Tinder, which I also use, but have had varying success, mostly not success, with. I feel like on Tinder, you get a lot more, you know, fuckboys, for one. And then for two, I think a lot of people on Tinder it's just a bigger mishmash of people, and people are, like, less well-versed. And so, like, I end up spending a lot of time explaining to people what ethical non-monogamy is. And Usually at that point, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, I don't mind doing that a little bit, but it can be kind of exhausting. So I'll go through, like, a frustration, and I, like, won't use it for a while, and then I'll, like, be, like, hopeful and, like, swipe a whole bunch, but it comes and goes in waves. I did meet someone on Tinder who I saw for a long time, though, so it's possible. It's just less likely.
Yeah, I try to tell people I'm actually more of a fan of OkCupid than any of the other ones, primarily because one of the things that I worry about when I'm dating, maybe more so now, is like, is this person a racist? And it was something I've always been conscious about because I look a certain way.
Yeah.
And I've definitely messaged people and they're like, what are you? And I'm like, black. And they're like, I'm going to stop messaging you now. Or I don't date black guys. So it's nice to go into someone's... Cool. It's like, great.
And yeah. It's to nice test to out go. If someone's a little bit racist. Yeah, and yeah, I guess
you,
in the same...
The questions, you don't have to.
They're no, rare. Exactly. It's right out there. And similarly, like, I can see right there if the person even acknowledges what ethical non-monogamy is or understands, like, the difference between cheating and dating. You know, like, it's a lot more easy to, like, rule out people where I'm like, nope, nope, nope. Like, it's easier to narrow down to people I would actually want to go out with.
Yeah, Tinder definitely lacks a lot of nuance. And that's why it's appealing to so many more people. But if you're dating with a situation that requires a little more nuance to explain, people are like, nope, I don't get it. Do you want to fuck tonight? Or
right.
Yeah.
Like, I had this guy super like me, but, like, now I've become suspicious. If someone super likes me, I'm like, they're probably just looking for sex. They're like, ooh, look, a married person who also dates. Great. They're going to want to fuck right away.
I didn't consider that.
So when I get a super like, if the person's also poly, then I'm like, oh, okay, that's why they super liked. They're like, oh, it's so rare to find another person. But if it's not that, I'm like, it's probably someone who just wants to have sex. And then this guy messaged me, and at first I was like, what are you looking? We were like, sort of, it seemed like maybe it was gonna go okay. And then it became clear he didn't actually understand what I was looking for. And then he just tried to fucking drag me. He's like, you're on here and you say this and this, but like, you don't say that, like, blah blah blah. And like, I said I live in Hoboken, you said that's kind of far, and if you're only willing to date people in Brooklyn, blah 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 blah. And I was like, whoa. And like, laid into me, and then he's like, whatever, I have to go on a date now with someone else, a friends with benefits. And I'm like, okay, bye. And then he unmatched me, and I was like, that's good riddance.
Why would you be bothered by that at all?
I don't know.
You're like, I'm going to go on a date. And you're like, cool.
It's congrats. Interaction like these that make me grateful for Twitter, where I could be like, holy shit, something weird just happened. Am I crazy or is this weird? It's very validating to, like, snap stuff like that or, like, crazy messages are okay, keep it, have someone, and just be like, this is weird, right? And then have people be like, yes, that is weird. This person's crazy. It's a relief.
There's definitely a value in being able to say, like, am I being weird or are they weird? And everyone's like, no, they're weird.
Yeah, they're like, nope, that is objectively weird.
The last time that happened, well, not exactly the same, but I was messaging someone, we matched. I was like, oh, okay, she's, so far, everything on paper looks great. She's like, what are you looking for? I'm like, well, I'm kind of looking for something serious. She's like, great, me too, awesome. And she sends me a message and I don't reply for like 3 hours. And then I reply and I'm like, hey, you know, because this is the first day of messaging, I just reply like a normal human. And she's like, you know, I can't be with somebody who's going to wait hours to reply to me. I thought you were looking for something serious. And I was like,
what? I mean,
that's not how it works. It's
like,
not...
I have a life. Yeah. I'm not just hanging around my computer waiting to get messages from
you. Sorry, I was doing my job.
Yeah.
I have a job.
Yeah.
It's like, part of the reason you find me attractive is that I'm employed.
Right, or they have a weird job where they don't really have to do anything.
Yeah,
I don't know who these people are.
Also, I have to take screenshots of these messages so that I can have content. So, you know,
that
of itself is a job.
Yeah.
So we got a little ahead.
Yeah.
So to you,
uh-huh.
I ask. Oh, and what's great is that now when people are like, what does it mean to be poly? You could just send them to this podcast.
I will. Yeah. I'll be like, listen to this. Come back if you're still interested.
Listen to this. It was me. So what does it mean to be poly? To you and broader.
Well, okay. So I'll start with ethical non-monogamy, actually, because I feel like it's nested. So ethical non-monogamy means you are in a relationship with someone else, like maybe you're married, maybe you're primary partners, maybe you just are serious with someone, but it is okay to also have a physical relationship with other people. Like, you both understand that this is okay, you've negotiated out, you've talked about it, and then you can see other people. And so polyamory is sort of nested within that to some degree, where you actually can be in love with more than one person at the same time. And some people who are polyamorous, like, think that that even excludes the physical. Like, you can be in love with multiple people, but you're only still having sex with one partner, or you're having sex with a lot of people. And then there's a lot of, like, stuff that's in between. And so for me, and so everyone has their own, like, little definition, so I try not to, like, make too many assumptions about exactly what it means for someone. But for me, I identify as poly because I think it is possible. I do love more than one person, and that's basically what it means. Like, I have the capacity to love more than one person and have romantic and physical relationships with more than one person. So that's how I think about it. But if some polyamory expert wants to swoop in and say, no, it means this, then that's,
well, I mean,
know, that's their prerogative. But I, you know, that's how I operationalize it for me.
Yeah. I think everyone, I think everyone talks about it in a different way.
Yeah.
Even the experts, like Dan Savage, always calls it monogamish. And monogamish, correct me, please.
Yeah.
When he says monogamish, I'm assuming that he's meaning ethical non-monogamy.
I think that that's what it means.
Or
I
as
think
close
it,
as I can.
I think there's a layer to it where he sees it as it's a relationship that, for the most part, appears to most people as monogamous. Like, what my marriage does. Like, to most people, it looks like we don't see other people because we don't tell a lot of people that we do. But that you do, in fact, occasionally or maybe frequently see other people, but you have the appearance of being a traditional monogamous couple.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. And that's, and I guess, I think you said something about it being nested, because then you think about, because I was speaking to someone, I was like, I'm going to have this guest on the podcast. I'm super excited.
Yeah.
And they're like, is that a swinger? And I was like, I don't think that's not a swinger, but swingers sort of fall within somewhere.
So I think, so swinger is also ethical non-monogamy. So swinger is sort of like the opposite of polyamory. Like, polyamory is really about the capacity to love and may have a physical component, where swinger is like almost exclusively the physical component and not really the romantic component. Different people identify as swingers, and like, it means different things to different people. Like, there are people who are very like modern swingers, and it just means they kind of go to and host sex parties and fuck other people at these parties and stuff, and that's cool. There's sort of a more like misogynistic history to it, where it used to be like husbands would bring their wives and like they would negotiate what would happen, and like it wasn't like the women were really involved in the conversation, and it wasn't, I guess consent was sort of implied if you trusted your husband, but it was real, it was very much about wife swapping and not about all parties enthusiastically making their own decisions and consenting. I don't think that that's how it works for everyone anymore, but I think that that's kind of the history of it. And it's also, I just, it's not something I really identify with because I don't have exposure to that. Like, I do meet people who identify as swingers, and, you know, that's fine. And some of them I think of, they're like, oh, I'm a swinger, but then I also date. And so I'm like, okay. But I think how people choose their own labels kind of varies. But that's sort of how I think about swinging.
Yeah, which is why I think it's important to say, this is why I phrased it as, what does poly mean to you? Because, you know, to the layperson who is not poly, it's going to have one meaning. And to someone who feels like they are an expert in the field, it's going to have another meaning. And somebody's just going to look at it as just the book definition.
Sure. There's this one stock image that's like always used for polyamory, and it's the white man's feet sticking out from blankets and then like a pair of ladies' feet next to them. Polyamory can include like three people dating or like eight people dating or whatever. And like, that's cool. That's not how I practice it. There's nothing wrong with it. If that's what's working for you, it's great. I mean, I feel like it's hard enough to have a one-on-one relationship. I think having a third equal player just sounds incredibly difficult, and if you can pull that off, that's amazing. That's not something I'm looking for, and that's not something that I do.
My one trivia thing about that is the guy who created Wonder Woman had a what everyone believes was a polyamorous relationship.
Oh, really?
With, he had a wife and he had a secondary partner, and they lived together until they all died.
I mean, that's amazing. Like, if they were all really happy, then that's great.
It seems like it. And he based Wonder Woman on both of them.
That's cool.
And also, that's why there's, like, a ton of bondage in Wonder Woman, too, apparently.
Yeah, she has her whip of justice or something.
Lasso of Truth.
So close.
Lasso of Truth.
Yeah.
You can confirm that I actually have a picture of Wonder Woman in my apartment. It's right behind you.
Oh, yeah. There it is. Yes.
There it is.
Very nice.
Yeah. So, how did you come to, or when did you realize that polyamory was a lifestyle that you wanted?
Oh, man. So, my path is totally strange. I met my now husband when I was 21, and we were exclusive, and we were together, and we got married when we were 27, and around when I was approaching 30, there were a couple of things going on. One was just that I really feel like in this society, like, as a woman and as you age, you kind of become, and if you're partnered with a man, you really sort of become invisible, and you get sort of dismissed as you're just somebody's wife, and you're not... There's a lot of power that comes with being acknowledged as, like, an attractive young single person that's, like, and it's not just power, but it's also, like, it makes me feel good. Get added to my self-esteem when, like, people would flirt with me or smile at me, and that just kind of was drying up, which was sort of just a bummer. And, like, it wasn't like it was terrible. It's just sort of sad to see that lose. And inevitably it happens, I guess, because as we all age, you're not going to be a sexy, you know, 21-year-old your whole life.
Sexy co-ed.
It's too bad, I guess, and that's cool. So that was one thing that was going on. Another thing that was going on is I'd been on hormonal birth control for over a decade, which, bizarrely, doctors don't really talk about this, and there's not a lot of research on it, but it really can affect your libido, and it did for me, to the point where I was just so disinterested in sex that I just was, you know, I was just at a super all-time low. So I was feeling like no one thinks I'm attractive. I don't feel attractive. I don't even have any interest in sex. And so it was just this very low point. And so I kind of was like, all right, I need to do something about this. So we tried a bunch of different things and we determined it was probably birth control. And so I quit. And then it can take a long time for it actually to change for you. About 6 months later, I was actually on a work trip for 3 weeks. And... like, it just felt like a switch went on where, like, I was like, oh my god, this must be what it's like to be a teen boy. Like, I can't stop thinking about sex at all, and I'm on a trip away from my husband. Holy shit, holy shit. And then also, there was an added element where I'm like, I also don't remember this part where I'm obsessed with boobs. Like, this is new. And so I kind of... So I don't think that quitting birth control makes you queer, but it can, or it did for me. It happened this one time. So I was like, this is weird. And so I went home and talked to my husband about it. And so it started this, like, long kind of dialogue about, okay, well, what does it mean that I'm attracted to women now? And what if that was actually a good thing? Like, what if me dating women made me feel like a more confident and sexual person and made... us have, like, better connection, like, physically and romantically. So we kind of talked through a lot of things, kind of decided what ground rules would we have, or what ground rules can you even have. We read a lot about it, we thought a lot about it, we listened to, like, a lot of Savage Love, and sort of, you know, and, like, it wasn't like this, like, project where we're like, we're gonna solve this, but it was just sort of an ongoing dialogue we had for a long time. And then at the end we concluded that dating would be fun and we should try it. And so
wait, can I just say that I love that because what people might not know about you is that you're an academic.
Yeah.
And so I was like, the way
we
you
should
describe,
do some research.
Yeah, yeah, you did some research, and then in conclusion, I love that. I love that so much.
Yeah, yeah, you shouldn't delve into anything without doing your research. So, so we took a very academic approach, like, let's learn more about this. And so, anyway, so a part of this was, you know, he's like, okay, well, it's okay if you date women. And I'm like, well, if it's okay for me to date women, is it okay for you to date women? And if it's okay for you to date women, why isn't it okay for me to date men? And then we just ultimately concluded, like, we should just date whoever we want to date, because it's dumb to have these goofy rules that don't, like, it's not like it's a less of a violation for me to, like, be with a man versus a woman, which neither of us agreed should be. So we kind of just like, okay, well, let's see how it goes.
Yeah, if you're gonna see other people, the gender, really, once you get down to it. I know that a lot of guys say that, like, well, like, would it though? Like, they're still with someone else,
right? Like, I think in some ways there's this sort of deep, like, idea where, like, a man just doesn't feel threatened by the connection that women have to other women. But I feel like you should be equally threatened by that. Like, you should either not be threatened or be threatened. Like, it's like,
I would be more
when you connect to
another.
Yeah, like, because, like, they can offer something that you cannot. Like, they've got a different system going on. I don't know. I mean, then part of it too is just like, well, okay, what is threatening about it? And then that's, like, really getting into the meat of, like, what are you afraid of? And, like, that's, I think, so this is a big part of, like, what I think people who do well at practicing ethical non-monogamy or polyamory is like, you have to get really good about talking about really hard things. Like, you have to, in my opinion, you have to be able to talk about the things that scare you the most, about, like, what if our relationship changes, or what if this happens, or what if this, if you're willing to have those conversations and talk about what you're really most afraid of, and, like, get the reassurance you need, or negotiate the boundaries or the things that you want, then you're coming from this very empowered place where you feel very secure in your relationship, because you've, like, laid it all out there. Like, everything you want and you need is made known, and you've agreed on it. And that's a really great place to be coming from when you're trying to strengthen and build a relationship.
Right, yeah.
I think there are people who are less good at it, and I think that that makes it harder. Like, it might be easier to not have a difficult conversation, but it'll be harder later when your feelings are hurt or someone else's feelings are hurt because you never really talked about what it is that's causing the problem.
Right. I think for a lot of people, they are so, well, I know this, a lot of people that read my blog have this fear of, like, what are we? That conversation.
Yeah.
I understand that's a difficult conversation, but would you rather have that conversation or... why are you still sleeping with other people? I thought you were going to get rid of your Tinder or whatever. Like, it's better to have that tough conversation up front than the angry conversation later.
Right. I mean, for me, I feel like it's so much better to have the hard or disappointing or painful conversation early on. Because if you have it, like, 6 months in, like, it's so much more painful because you spend all this time and energy, like, investing in this person. And then you find out that they... you know, don't really ever want to get married, or they don't actually want to be with you, or whatever it is that you're afraid of happening. Like, wouldn't you rather know 2 weeks in than 6 months in? Like, you'd rather know.
Yeah, I think that, especially me, I am very big on the value of my time.
Yeah.
And the older I get, I realize that, you know, every single day means I'm closer to not being alive than not. So. Yeah. Like, my time is very important, so I'd much rather know, like, listen, are you even into me? Like, should we even go on a third date? Like, if I haven't kissed you on the second date, I feel like I've wasted my time, and I don't want to waste my time on a third date.
No, it's... Yeah,
that's just me personally.
Yeah, and I think it's just better to just not judging. I guess if you don't want to have those conversations, don't. It's always been my experience that it's better to have those conversations and just know.
Mm-hmm.
And... you know, and even on, like, Tinder, I've had these conversations where we chat about what we want, and it turns out that the person and I don't want different things. And I'm so glad we took those 30 minutes to clarify that we don't actually want the same thing, instead of going out liking each other and then running into, like, emotional turmoil later. Like, it's like, okay, I think we're not a match. And, like, normally, you know, other instances where people can be jerks, a lot of times the person's like, okay, best of luck. And it's just a sincere, like, okay, this is not a match, but it's fine.
Yeah.
And it's better that we talked about it now than made it harder and made plans and blah, blah. And, you know, I think it's just better to talk about it.
I'm a big fan. I'm actually a big fan of what I've heard from you and also tons of people who identify as poly or ethically non-monogamous is the high degree of communication.
Yeah.
I think that there's a lot of... I guess the best term would be, like, vanilla, like, monogamous relationships. A lot of those relationships lack that degree of communication, and the communication is happening with their friends, and then their friends advise them to do something, and they both have that, and then they come in, and then they go back, and it's like, just talk to each other and talk about your fears in a relationship, and, you know.
Yeah, I mean...
people are really, not all people, but especially straight men, are afraid to express themselves, and I say that as somebody who every once in a while I'm like... I don't want to tell someone I like them.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a certain value in being like, doing this makes me feel weak.
Yeah.
And people respond to that very well because they're like, oh, well, if you can be vulnerable, I can be vulnerable.
Yeah.
And I think that telling someone, listen, I'm married. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be, this is what I can do with you and this is what I can't.
Yeah.
And then you kind of open yourself up to criticism or people just insulting you.
Yeah.
Which happens, I think, more so, especially with poly folks, people are really quick to say, there's something wrong with them. And it's like,
yeah. Yeah, there's definitely like a thought that there's something wrong with your relationship if you're looking for something outside of it. And I'm very not. Like, I was seeing someone for a little while, and they said, I know you don't believe that monogamy works. And I was like, I never said that. I think it works great for some people. I think it makes some people really happy. And I think non-monogamy makes some people really happy. And I don't think there's anything wrong with looking for different types of connections. You know, like, people always say, like, you can love more than one child, you can have more than one friend, and it's the same idea. And for me, like, there are things that I can't give to my husband because they're not things that I think are interesting or fun, and it's great that there are other people who can do that for him, because then I don't have to, because I don't want to, and then he gets to make an interesting connection with someone else. That's very positive, and I think that that's great, and for me, it's like the same thing. It's like, I, like, by dating, like, I get to meet lots of different kinds of people and, like, see different parts of the city and, like, learn about things that, like, probably I wouldn't get exposed to, like, especially... you know, it's very easy to, like, get into your own little circle and never really explore outside of your comfort zone. And by doing this, I get to, like, have new experiences. And I feel like that's very healthy and good for me.
I think so. I think that I learn a lot when I'm dating. Mm-hmm. I learn a lot. I pick up a lot of new things. I try to do new things.
Yeah.
And the idea of being able to continue to do that while you're in a relationship, it's like, that sounds good.
Yeah.
I do like that you made the point where, because I think that's a common misconception. It's not only a common misconception, but it's also the way media makes you choose, like, can humans be monogamous and be happy? Or can humans be non-monogamous? It's like, what if we can be both? Like, what if we don't have to choose between one or two? Maybe somewhere.
Yeah, it's exactly like in sociology and anthropology, they get into a lot of these stuff of like, well, what is the true human nature?
Yeah.
And so they explore cultures all over the world, and the thing they determined is people do everything.
Yeah.
Like, that's what they figured out. People do everything. So, like, there's a variation. Like, I don't think there's a thing, there's a one thing we're gonna do. I think different people do different things.
Yeah, I think that there's so much emphasis on there has to be one right way, and everything about humans is not that.
You know?
And that's what makes us so, I mean, that's kind of why we are where we are in terms of, maybe not in America, I mean, like, humanity as a whole. Like,
there's variation.
Humans are cool. People... like, we've done so many different random things, and if you have an interest, somebody's already into that interest.
Yeah.
And they could be across the world or across the street.
Yeah. And that's exactly, I mean, that's the other great thing is, like, this is, poly is so much easier to do in New York City. Like, if I were in, like, rural Texas, I feel like this would be a lot harder. And like, I see people on Twitter who are like in the middle of nowhere, and it's very difficult for them to meet other people.
Oh yeah,
especially if they're like me, where they're not entirely out to their whole community or to their family or whatever. It can be very tricky to just even meet other people. Like, I get to date a lot, and even then it's really hard to meet other people. Like, I can't imagine, like, if I was like living out in like Podunk, Missouri or something.
Yeah, that would be a tough one. That'd be a tough one. I think that, someone please correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like it's New York City makes it a lot easier to be out.
Mm-hmm.
Culturally, whatever you are, it's easier to be out in New York. It's not the, I mean, being out in New York is not by any means just easy.
No.
It's easier than, say,
you're gonna get, generally you're gonna get more acceptance here than you would in most other places in the United States, I would imagine.
And there's just communities here.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's also, I'm sorry.
Oh no, just like that like New York City has poly cocktails, but I doubt that like Omaha has poly cocktails. Yeah. Although I could be wrong.
There could be one.
There could be a very successful poly cocktails in Omaha, and shame on me for assuming.
There might be a meetup group in Boise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I haven't checked.
100,000 people in it.
Yeah.
They just all come in from all the outreaches.
But, exactly.
I think also that in New York City, you can also be, I guess, in the closet with whatever your lifestyle is.
Mm-hmm.
And people are accepting of that too, because they get it.
New York is so weird because you're surrounded by so many people that, like, people actually have to put a higher premium on privacy because there's so little of it. It's, like, sort of the opposite of a small town where everyone knows everyone's business. Like, in here, it's, like, it's really easy to live next door to someone for 10 years and barely know anything about them except what time they leave for work.
Yeah, that's actually true. I only know one of my neighbors.
Yeah.
Names. He's really great. But the only reason I know his name is because... not because we ran into each other, but because we ran into each other in a bar in Williamsburg.
Oh,
and
weird.
And he was like, you live in my building. And I was like, I do live in your building. And then we took a cab together home.
Oh.
And he was like, what's your name? And I was like, oh, it took, you know, I lived there for 4 years. And now we know each other.
So, thrifty friends. This is good.
Yeah. Yes, it worked out.
Yeah.
He was like, I'm leaving. I'm getting a cab. Do you want to jump in? I was like, yes, I do.
Yeah.
Yes, I do.
Sounds great.
Yeah. So what do you think it takes to make polyamory work? Say I'm interested now. You've made me rethink my monoamory ways.
Yeah.
Monoamorous ways. Yeah. And I'm thinking, like, all right, I might want to try this out. What do you think it takes to make it work?
I think, so if you already have a partner, you guys need to talk it out and negotiate how you want to approach. Because you might want to have things like, are sleepovers okay? Or... mm. How do you feel about holidays? Or, like, what if I invited them to a work party? Like, it, you know, it's gonna, like, there's all kinds of things you kind of need to, like, think about and talk about before you just go out. So I would do that. If you don't have a partner, then when you're dating, so would you be trying to exclusively date other polyamorous people, or would you also be dating monogamous people at the same time? Is an important question. So I haven't really had good experiences dating people who identify as monogamous. since I've become poly, and that's often because I think I think it can work. I think that there are people where it could work. I just, the most frequent experience I've had, and I've heard about people having, is the poly and the mono person are dating, and it's like at the beginning, mono people will see more than one person at once,
right,
you know,
yeah.
And then when they get serious, they commit and they stop seeing other people. And so a mono person and a poly person will like be on the same page up to a certain point, except then the mono person will meet the one they want to be exclusive, and it's not going to be you because
right,
you're not going to
yeah.
be exclusive. And then you, and then it ends, which is fine if you don't want something very serious, like if you're just interested in dating, then that's totally cool. But, like, for me, I do like dating, but I, especially, like, when I'm looking for, like, more like a partner than just someone I kind of see, I want to know that that's not going to happen, because it's, you know, getting broken up with sucks. Like, it's not like it's any easier just because I'm already married. It's not like rejection hurts any less. I mean, I guess I spend less time, like, thinking, like, the doomsday thoughts, like, I'm going to die alone. It sucks to get broken up with, and so I try to avoid these scenarios where you're poly and mono dating, and I think it can work. I would say that's more of an advanced move.
Yeah.
So I would try to, like, find other people through OKC is the easiest way, or, like, maybe other, like, you can also do it through, like, FetLife or other sites like that. I don't use FetLife because it doesn't even have an app on the iPhone. That's, like, my biggest complaint.
Wait, really?
No, it's only
that's
on the Android. Or
what?
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it does now, but it didn't
recently. It's probably because Apple blocks a lot of stuff like that.
Yeah.
It blocks a lot of adult content.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah,
that makes
that's
sense.
Why.
In any
yeah.
case.
Because
if
they have an app and it's not on iTunes, that's why. Yeah.
Ah, there you go. Well, in any case.
They're loosening up on it now that Tim Cook is.
You can also go to Poly Cocktails. That tends to be more of a social event than it is to, like, meet people you want to date. But it could be good to just go and meet other people, and you can kind of, like, talk about how other people handle, you know, logistics or whatever. And just meet other people who are doing it, too, and just learn a little bit more about it.
That's really cool. I never thought about networking for the lifestyle you want to choose.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I've always been straight.
Yeah.
Mono.
Yeah.
Networking for that lifestyle really is just, for the most part,
everyday life.
It's most of the American population.
Yeah,
is,
movies, television.
Yeah,
it's the way most
just,
people date these days around you. Yeah, so it's pretty normal.
Yeah.
And so you don't really need
norm,
to,
at least.
Sure, it's average. And so,
average,
like, you don't need to, like, seek out perspectives. You're like, I'm a man looking to date a woman. What should I do? Like, it's like, well, a lot of people are doing it. There's a lot of info out there that you don't have to specifically find the community.
Ask your parents, probably.
Right. They might know.
Yeah. Ask your straight uncle.
Sure. Ask your straight uncle.
Yes. Ask your straight uncle, Demetrius. I'm glad you talked about dating. So, like, what does dating look like for you? Because here's what dating looks like for me. It's very simple. If I'm not seeing anyone in particular, I'm going on dates, I'm trying to meet new people, trying to find someone I click with.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm starting to see someone and it's not serious, I'm seeing them, I might go on a date here or there just to, you know, not put all my eggs in one basket.
Yeah.
Then it gets serious, then maybe they become my girlfriend or they try to stab me. I don't know. Who knows?
Cool.
That's usually how my breakups start.
Yikes.
But so what is dating?
How are you meeting these people? Yeah. I'm not going to use that site.
It's a stab Cupid.
Oh. Yeah. I've heard bad things about that one.
Yeah. But you know what? I got to tell you, their algorithm, really good.
Plus they're hot.
Yes. Yeah.
The stabby ones are the
hottest. The
stabby
ones are always the hottest. Oh, no.
The tragic thing about dating.
Yeah.
So,
that's what Romeo said.
Yes. dating for me is just, like, it's not that different from how I understand mono people date, which is, like, hey, let's meet up, like, let's go get a drink, or, like, let's do something fun, and then we kind of see if there's chemistry, and then if we like each other, then we see, do you want to see each other again? And then, so for me, the trickiest part is other poly or ENM people will have an idea of how frequently they want to see other partners. And that's probably the thing that I get the most nervous about asking someone is like, how often do you want to hang out? Like, I'm like nervous. They're going to be like, I don't know. I'm kind of busy, like once a month. And I'll be like, that's cool. I definitely didn't want to see you every week. I'm also very busy. So negotiating how often you're going to see each other is, I feel like, for me, the trickiest part. Like, if you actually really like someone and you want to keep seeing them, and you kind of play that by ear. And then, you know, but the, one of the cool things that I really like is when you date poly people, you can actually talk about other dates you've been on. Like, I feel like it's a little bit of a no-no if you're mono.
Yeah.
Or you could talk about, like, something that happened 5 years ago, but you're not going to be like, I went on a date yesterday.
Yeah, probably.
And the, people aren't into that.
No.
Obviously. But I could totally be like, I went on this weird date yesterday. And then the person will be like, oh, yeah, what happened? Like, you can, like, I can totally talk to other people about other people I'm seeing right now, which is useful, I feel like, because especially because I went so long without dating between, like, you know, 21 and 30-ish, I guess, I, like, missed a lot of normal things that, like, I missed dating in my 20s, for one. I also missed dating when texting was really a thing. I also missed internet dating. So I had to, like, dive in. I felt like I was, like, starting middle school where I'm like, everybody knows all the rules except for me, and I'm very confused and, like, was, like, you know, and I was asking my mono friends for help. I'm like, what am I supposed to do? And they're like, I don't know. Like, you know.
Nobody knows.
So, I mean, no one really knows, but, getting the hang of it was hard.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm still getting the hang of it.
Yeah.
And I've been online dating since, my first online date was 18 years ago.
Wow.
And I'm kind of good at it. I'm better than most, I think.
Yeah.
I'm like a B plus.
Yeah. Yeah.
It gets weird. So do you have, so you're married.
Mm-hmm.
So that is clearly your primary partner.
Yes.
What about, so you date, but do you also get a boyfriend, girlfriend, and also date other people on, like, how does that work?
Yeah. Right now.
Is that like a food pyramid?
Right. It's a food pyramid. Used sparingly. So some people are, like, totally into, I forget what the word, it's like chaos or something. Or, like, non-hierarchical dating where they don't believe in having primaries. I'm married. I have a primary. That's how my life is. And then, for me, I'm open to being with other partners that are more or less serious. My biggest constraint is time. Like, I can't date 30 other people. Just logistically, that's too hard. Like, that's crazy.
There's only 7 days in a week.
Sure, you know, and, you know, I have I have a job, I have responsibilities, I have, like, I have other things that I do besides go on dates. So, like, we all do. So, I have a boyfriend also who I've been seeing for like about 6 months, and then I have a couple other people that I see less frequently who I call sweeties, who yes, it's a very
cute.
So I have like a couple of sweeties, so like we aren't very serious, like I'm not in love with them. We kind of, but we like each other. They're like friends that I also get physical with, and we see each other when we can, and sometimes I don't see them for a couple months because we're both busy or traveling or whatever, and that's fine, but I have them in my life, and so that's kind of nice. I like that. And then I guess if one of them wanted to become more serious, I would definitely think about it, and I still like try to meet new people, although that comes with varying success, especially like with the number of relationships I have right now. It's really hard to meet new people unless I, like, deprioritize other people.
And
that's not terrible, like, especially with the sweeties. Like, you know, no one's offended if it's like, oh, I can't meet with you for 2 weeks. It's like, okay, fine. Like, we both know what it is.
Yeah.
But it would be, like, pretty hard if all of a sudden I told, like, my husband, I'm like, yeah, we're only going to hang out one night a week because I need to meet someone new. I think he'd be like, that's not cool. And, like, one of my sweeties, like, he has a live-in girlfriend, and then he has, like, a girlfriend that's not the live-in girlfriend, and then he has a bunch of, he calls them lovers, I call them sweeties, whatever. But, yeah.
That sounds so much better than friend with benefits.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it also, not only the term sound much better, but it also sounds more appropriate for what it is.
Yeah.
I think friend with benefits just, it, I don't know, it just sounds weird.
It's
to me.
Really tricky. I used to have that in my OkCupid profile, and I took it out because it people don't seem to totally distinguish friend with benefits from fuck buddies, which I think that there's definitely a distinction, and I get why some people don't necessarily see it from the perspective I do, but I'm like, no, I actually like want to like you. I want to enjoy spending time with you. I it's not just about sex.
Yeah.
And if that's what you want, that's fine. It's just, that's not what I'm looking for. You
know? Yeah. I think, I don't know if it's definitely not, I think a lot of it has to do with age, but also for me personally, if I'm going to have casual sex with someone, I want to be able to say, well, now that sex's over, I want to have a conversation with you.
Right. Like, you don't want to be like,
leave immediately.
Get out.
Yeah. Get out of here.
Shoo.
Yeah. I don't want to call a surge price Uber.
No.
Yeah. Like, I can just, we can just part ways in the morning. Like, let's be friendly. Come on.
Yeah. You don't want to be, like, combing your apartment, making sure they didn't leave anything behind. Like, get out, because I don't want to see you.
Oh, God. Yeah, like, like a, what's it called? A black light?
Oh, God. Oh, no. Oh, that's a whole different, separate problem that you don't want to get into.
No.
Oh, yuck.
Got it. By the way, just friendly reminder for dudes, change your sheets. Like, just, I remember you telling me we didn't get into it.
Yeah.
You know, when we met up to discuss this podcast about.
Oh God. I went out with this guy and it was like pretty much going fine, and then we hooked up and the sex was just not very good, which is neither here nor there. But then, and then it was like really late, and it wasn't in New York. I was traveling for work, so I was in D.C., and like the train stopped running in the middle of the night. And I was like, I don't know how to get home, and like I'm not in my familiar city. And I was like, okay, I guess I just have to like sleep over and like leave as early as possible in the morning and just like scrap this insane situation. But then I was like, oh my God, something is weird, and like I was like, something smells bad. And I'm like, oh God, is it me? And I'm like panicking, like I forgot to put on deodorant, and now like this bed stinks because I stink. But, and then like his dog is like scratching at the door, and I'm like, what is going on? Like, I got like no sleep, I feel like. And he's like, oh, the dog normally sleeps in here. And then I'm like, wait, does the dog normally sleep in the bed? And he's like, yeah. And like, okay, if this is you, fine, like whatever. But like the bed smelled like dog. And once I realized that like I was like lying on dog smell, I was like, oh my God, I have to get out of here. So at like 6 a.m. I like sprang out of bed. I was like, well, gotta go. And he's like, oh, this was really fun, we should do it again. And then I just blurted out, are you being facetious? Because I sincerely thought that we were on the same page, that this was awful. But apparently we weren't, and I'm an asshole. But the bed smelled like dog. So yeah, if your bed smells like dog, change your sheets before Elena comes over.
Yes.
So it doesn't stink.
That is like rule number one. I feel like that's one of the main reasons that I'm successful in dating in any way. It's just like I have home training, like have clean sheets.
Yeah.
You know, bathe.
Sure, you know. Sure.
Wear clean clothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All helpful tips. For anyone. Mono, poly, whatever. Yeah. Yeah. Basic hygiene.
I've just been thinking about that story for like, what is it, like a week?
Oh, God.
Like it's so good bad. It's so good bad.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Oh, oof. Boy. What sort of person do you look for when you're dating? Besides someone who understands the lifestyle and is okay with it, and it's like, I'm on board.
So aside from someone who gets what I'm about.
Yeah.
I think we all look for the same things. Like, you want someone who's going to be nice, and you're going to want someone who you have shared interests with. I like to look for people who are a little bit different from me, because then I get to, you know, learn something about something I don't necessarily know a lot about. But like, let's be real, like I had this idea, like I'm like, I'm gonna meet all different kinds of people, like I'm gonna go out with like a fireman and a computer nerd. But like the reality is like, like you gotta be honest with yourself. I'm like, I'm not gonna go out with a fireman. Like, no. I am a nerd. I'm going to be attracted to other nerds, but at least different types of nerds.
Yes.
A lawyer nerd, a computer nerd.
Yes.
Plus
they have really weird schedules.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fireman. Yeah, it's true. Yeah, that is another thing I figured out. Like, I can't, because I have a young kid and because of my job, like, I can't date people who are, like, bartenders or, like...
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's too hard. You know, like, the number of hours that we're awake at the same time and want to hang out is just so limited. It's too hard.
Yeah.
So there's that. I definitely try to date women, and it's very difficult. So like, trying to meet another woman is one of the things that I have to work really really hard at. It's dudes are plentiful, dudes who are interested in women are plentiful, women who are interested in women less plentiful. Women who are interested in women who are non-monogamous, even less plentiful. And then in that case, that the person is married to a guy with a child, even less plentiful. So the dating pool is small.
Yes.
And I think you and I are talking about this a little bit, but I find women to be very skittish. Where we'll message and then we're maybe gonna meet up and then they'll like peace out at the last second and not come. And yeah. I don't really, this, a man has done this to me maybe like once, and like women do it to me all the time.
Yeah. I think, I'm sure it has a lot to do with, just, I'm sure it's that, but also it's a supply and demand sort of thing where mm-hmm. I'm into women. If I'm in that subset of women who's into women, I can also find a woman who, you know, easier to hang out with, and I have to manage my time less, because I think that a lot of people, when they just even dating someone with kids, a lot of it, I'm sure there's just some people like, I don't want to date someone with kids, but a lot of people are more, I would want to date someone with kids. The problem is that time,
mm-hmm.
especially if you're dating a lot of people, there's limits to your time.
Right, exactly. You know? Yeah, which is normal.
Yeah,
we all have limits on our time.
I think it comes down to, like, obligation. Like, it's hard for me to want to... I'm very hesitant to date anyone personally who has weird hours, you know? Like, yeah. If I work 9 to 5 and they're like, well, this week I work midnight to 4 a.m., it's like, how can I go on dates with you? It's easier to date that person when you're in a relationship with them, where you're like, okay, well, we can meet up, you know, if we're staying at each other's places, but... You meet someone whose schedule changes every week, or someone who works 4 hours on, 3 days off. It's like,
yeah,
how do we manage?
So it's tricky. So, I mean, yeah, scheduling is definitely important. Like, one of the things people talk about is how, like, if you have like a lot of serious partners, that they all end up sharing their Google calendars, because like like you're not just looking at your partner's Google calendar, but you're looking at your partner's other partner's Google calendar, because like that helps you figure. I've never done this, but people who like have very close relationships, like not just with their partner, but are very integrated into their partner's mm-hmm. lives, and like including their other live-in partner or something, they end up having to just do, like, logistically, like you just have to all know what each other's going on to figure out. You know, like, if you want to do a weekend away, like, that's going to be tricky. And, you know, apparently that you can get into that. But I haven't delved into that. I don't see other people's Google calendars or other people's partners' Google calendars that I'm not even dating. But I could see why that would definitely make things easier in some ways.
Do you have a Google calendar for you?
Of course, yes. No, my husband and I both keep, we both keep Google calendars, and we put dates on there, which helps us, like, negotiate, like, who's going to be home watching our kid, or, like, when do we get date nights and stuff. You know, just keeping each other informed helps us stay on top of it, so we don't let it get carried away.
Got it. That does go back to my point earlier about the high degree of communication.
Yeah.
I think for me, my biggest hesitance is just, like, oh, it seems like a lot of work.
Yeah. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, but it sounds like you are... happy. You're happier than a lot of people in monogamous relationships that I've met. So
yeah like I mean, I feel like I have a good marriage and I have a good family, and I'm really happy with that. And then I get to have these other experiences too, which can be like frustrating and bizarre and heartbreaking, but are also fun and interesting. And I don't know, like, I think around when I turned 30, like, I kind of just went through this transformation. Like, maybe it's just getting older, but, you know, like, this happened to me where I start dating women and start dating lots of people, mm-hmm. and I also, like, started dyeing my hair and got a tattoo. But I kind of just sort of had this transformation where, like, I'm not dead yet. Like, I'm gonna live my life the way I want to live, because I'm not dead yet. And, like, having that sort of, I'm just gonna do whatever I want, because who knows how long we're gonna be here, was, like, a very good thing for me to just sort of adopt.
That's awesome. That is great. Before we close, I think you really have, I'm feeling a lot more knowledgeable about Holly. I did want to ask you.
Yeah.
For one piece of dating advice or dating wisdom that you would like to share.
I think you should just be as real as you can with other people. Like, even though it's really scary to, like, ask a question that might have a scary answer, like, do you want to go out again? Or how much do you want to see each other? Or whatever it is. Like, it's so much better to know than to not know. I think just being very open about what you really want and what you need, like, seems like you really can't go wrong. And I think it makes you a lot happier. It's very freeing to just get that off your chest and have that out there and have the answer. Even if it's not the answer you want, it's better to know. So I think we should all just be a little bit more honest.
Thank you.
That's
great. I will say, this was absolutely amazing. I'm happy to have you in my quote-unquote studio.
Yeah. Thank you for inviting me to your studio. This is a lot of fun.
You're one of the few podcast guests who have actually been in my studio.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Lucky me.
Yes. Please don't steal any of the gold-plated chocolate bars.
I guess I'll have to empty out my purse before I go.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming and enlightening me, really.
Yeah.
And your academic approach to discovering the ins and outs of polyamory really, it just is cool. It's a great journey.
Yeah, thank you.
And where can people find you again on Twitter?
I'm at PolygalSeeks. My name is Perhaps. And you can also find me because I follow you. So
yeah, that's right. We often interact. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, you're definitely one of my favorite folks to interact with. I love your, you are very much a person who is not a reactionary. When people are like, I have this issue, you very much try to see things in a broader way.
Like you and I follow a lot of people, including a lot of mono people. And so when they have a issue, you know, I have to kind of be like, okay, well, I'm not a mono person, so I'm not going to approach this in the same way as you. But I feel like these rules of thumbs work for everyone.
Yeah.
It's usually be honest.
Yeah. There's sort of a through way with all of my guests have been like, just be honest. Like, don't be sketchy and purposely obscure what you're saying. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So thank you once again. And to my listeners, as always, good luck out there. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Tao of Indifference podcast. If you liked this episode and want more sex, dating, and relationship advice, subscribe to the Tao of Indifference on iTunes or Stitcher. And check out the blog at taoofindifference.com for more sex, dating, and relationship advice. Thank you for listening, and good luck out there.